welcome, everybody. Let's Talk Real Estate, your weekly BS with Barry Saywitz about the current commercial real estate market here in Southern California. As we take a no BS look at both sides of the issues driving this market today to find the best solutions going forward. With our man right in the middle, it's Barry Saywitz. Hey, Barry.
Hey, good morning, Paul, and good morning to all of our viewers and our listeners out there. Welcome back. If it's Tuesday, which I'm pretty sure it is, we are talking real estate. I'm Barry Saywitz, president of the Saywitz Company and managing partner of Saywitz Properties. And if it's one thing I've learned in my, I don't know how long I've been doing this, at least a couple of weeks, it's to try and surround yourself with good, smart people, get good information, make good business decisions, be informed. And so we're hoping today is all of that for you. And I'm excited about today's show. Before we get going, I do want to acknowledge a couple of things. One, we are past Halloween. We are looking ahead to Thanksgiving. So for everyone out there who's trying to make their Thanksgiving plans, I would suggest to go ahead and do that sooner rather than later. I'm also excited because last week was our 100th episode. And no one got me anything, which is fine because I don't need anything. But this week, Paul has gotten me, it wasn't a cake. I think he got a deal on it. It was the last of a leftover box of Oreo cookies because
you
it looks
lift it
like
up. They can't see it.
Nobody could see it, right? It is.
It's pretty elaborate.
It is what appears to be one and a half Oreo cookies. And I'm thinking Paul ate the other half of this one.
I did.
Just to see if it was okay.
Lick it and stick it.
Yeah. And then, you know, and
we've got the candle to stick.
We've got half a candle that looks like it was used on someone else's cake. So I feel very special.
Yes.
And with that in mind, I want to welcome our guest, Andrew Robin, Managing Director of Newmark Real Estate. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. So thanks for coming on. We've known each other for a long time, and you are a longtime resident of Orange County, longtime real estate professional here in Orange County. And appreciate you coming on the show. And you are what I'll call a specialist in the office market, but sort of a guru of many things. And so I thought today we would talk about the office market and whatever else we can stick our fingers into.
Sounds good. Let's do it.
So your background in real estate, I mean, how did you get into commercial real estate in the first place? What was the thing, if there was a thing?
So interesting question. I have a little probably different background. I grew up in San Diego, which actually happens to be the home of Jack in the Box Corporate, and my stepmother actually worked for Jack in the Box Corporate as a accountant for the franchisees. And one winter she came back or came into the house and said, "Hey, I know you've been working at the local restaurant, but not Jack in the Box, but a quick serve restaurant. Would you like to come in? Normally they pay a temp employee, they pay an agency $12. A temp gets $8. If they pay you $10 an hour to do some filing, would you like to do it?" I said, "Sure." Turns out it was in the real estate analysis department. So we got to actually start to look at, eventually they sat me down in front of a computer and realized as a high schooler, I was pretty decent on a computer, learned 10 key really quickly. And they said, "If we give you some more work to do, would you keep working for us?" So it was actually the department where they got to look at where the next Jack in the Box would be located in the country. And so with that, they expanded into markets in Missouri and in North Carolina while I was there, and all based on some of the analyses that we got to work on, which is really kind of interesting.
Which is great. And it was all downhill from there because now you work on commission, you get zero, right?
Exactly. But then
that was your biggest paycheck, right?
$10 an hour.
Guaranteed, at least.
It was guaranteed. But then when I went off to USC, I ended up in the business school at that time. The real estate program was located inside the business school at the undergrad level. So study that. And then out of college, I started working for a company locally here. I got my first job out of college at a company called the Allison Company locally, which had a long Orange County presence. But at this point in time, it was just down to the origination of debt with a lot of correspondent relationships. In other words, they had relationships with life insurance companies to originate debt, and they service those loans. And so I got to really drive out on the loan servicing side, which I assisted in that side of it. I got to drive out and see all markets of Southern California, going all the way up to Bakersfield, all the way down and out to El Centro, and everything in between, but located right here in Newport Beach. And then finally in 2005, there was a broker over at Lee & Associates who understood the background that I had there and where the debt origination comes from really affects on the sales side. And so I was recruited to go over to the sales side and then shifted into the leasing side very quickly as we kind of watched the market peak and level out without as many sales. And so really focused at that point on office leasing as being my primary you know, business arm, and then doing a lot of other things, whether it's selling a building or doing other product type as well. And then eventually in 2013, I was recruited to come to Newmark. So I've been there for a little over 10 years now.
And Newmark is national, international?
It's a national platform. Yep. So it started off as a tenant rep only firm in New York, with a long history in New York City. And then I believe it was in 2000, I don't recall if it was in 9 or 10, the leaders of Newmark teamed up with Howard Lutnick over at Cantor Fitzgerald, and they basically came up with the idea of how do we turn this into a national, in fact, and then ultimately a global platform. And at the time, Grubb & Ellis was going through their bankruptcy, and so they bought them out of bankruptcy and turned it into Newmark Grubb Knight Frank, because they had a relationship with Knight Frank overseas. And it was a long name.
It basically sounded
like a law firm. And a lot of us, you know, didn't roll off the tongue very easily. So then they ended up dropping the Grubb when they realized they didn't need the Grubb name anymore for recognition. And then eventually they severed the relationship with Knight Frank. So now we're just Newmark. But I've gone through a lot of different iterations over the 10 years. But
it's Newmark.
Yeah, it's Newmark. And it's a global platform. So it's, it has its nuances that's good for a global platform. But then, you know, we get to really act very regional and local on our own respect. So.
And so in today's world, you're dealing with office leasing in Orange County and dealing with, I'm going to assume, not only very sophisticated building owners, but also with some local
I like to call them entrepreneurial owners.
Yes.
It's a nice way of saying mom and pops.
Right. Yeah. And so you get all kinds. And so no different on the tenant side in terms of dealing with big national companies that have departments and groups, decision-making versus somebody who drives up and says, I like this one, let's go.
Yep.
So you get all kinds.
All kinds, all walks. And it's really interesting because you got to learn how to navigate through different personalities and different, you know, needs and motivating factors that sort of drive them. So,
yeah. And I won't dwell on the USC connection only because I went to UCLA. And so we will keep our fingers crossed for this weekend, although it looked abysmal.
Neither team were very good this last weekend.
And the worst part about it is since they both lost, they now are playing at 12:30. Which means you have to get up at the crack of dawn if you want to go to the game. So I'll be there as well. I'll look for you.
And the other
100,000 folks.
That's exactly right.
So, but back to real estate. So in terms of the office market in Orange County, you've been doing it a long time. I've been doing it a long time. So we've seen ups and downs. We've seen cycles in the market. I don't want to rewind all the way back, but if we rewind to pre-COVID, the office market was cooking along, right? And rental rates were really at probably the highest ever.
Yep.
Vacancy very low, right? Mm-hmm. Very difficult to find space. If you were a tenant, if you were a landlord, you're in good shape. Lots of buildings trading hands. Lots of tenants wanted to buy because the rent was very expensive. And if I had money, it would make better sense to buy.
And rates were lower. So it also made sense based on where debt was.
Yeah. And interest rates. Exactly. And so all of a sudden COVID hits, right? And then nobody knows what to do. I mean, you and I included. And so then once people figure it out, now they don't come back to work, right? Mm-hmm. And so now we are in what I'll call the new norm, which is there are still some companies, ours included, you have to come to work. I need the synergy. You have to be here. You have to interface with the other folks. I don't know how else to run the business. But there are other businesses where people still work from home. I think my brother's only been to work, Bobby, 5 or 6 times in the last 3 or 4 years, and they're okay with that. But that changes the dynamic of the real estate requirements and changes the appetite in the marketplace.
It's true. It's true. Yeah, it's been a really interesting time. I mean, look, you're right. When we were leading towards in 2019, as we were heading in that direction, we were almost as strong as in 2007, where we had, you know, a 7% vacancy in office space, which was like unheard of. And that makes it where that's very difficult to find office space that you're looking for in that type of environment. And we were heading in that direction. We weren't quite there. But yeah, COVID hit and everyone was sent home. And then people have had all these starts and stops and trying to figure out how they get their employees back into the office. And employees have a loud voice. So it's been very interesting to sort of navigate those waters.
And you've seen a lot of smaller local companies just not make it, or when the lease comes up, they work out of their house or they go take tiny space. And then you've seen bigger national companies sort of reduce the footprint because they don't have everybody coming in. And all of that just creates more vacancy and less appetite.
So what I kind of always use as a anecdotal is you sit there and say, okay, if you're a small company and you really were only in 2,000 feet, you probably were maybe up to 8 employees. And 8 employees working from home is a lot easier than you know, 40 or 80 or even 100 or however much larger that these, you know, large corporate clients or customers really need to occupy space. And so working from home for those small guys was really easy for them to do it initially, especially if they had an expiring lease initially. And then for them to come back, well, these are real costs out of the business owner's pocket. And so it's harder for them to make that decision to come back, especially when their employees sort of got used to it. The big corporate guys, what we've seen is they've cut their footprint on average about 30%. So yeah, that demand for office space is gone down dramatically. And in some cases, we saw really deep cuts where it was even a 75% cut. I do believe and that'll probably swing back. And this pendulum, you know, it's swung pretty far and it's not settled yet, in my personal opinion. But there's still cuts that are taking place. Each renewal, you know, with my conversations with landlords that I represent, we're always kind of sitting there saying, okay, crossing our fingers that reduction isn't going to be a big one, right, on that upcoming renewal, and that they need the space. And so there's a lot of reconnaissance where we'll sit there and we'll ask the property manager and we'll ask the, and maybe they'll even send us through to try and figure out, can we go make a visit just to see
if there's people at the
desk. Are they physically occupying? Yeah. Exactly. And if they're not physically occupying, does it look like the desk actually belongs to somebody? Is there someone's, are there personal items at that desk?
Is there some pens and pencils?
Yeah. So that's, I mean, it does make a difference, especially when you start trying to figure out when and how, and also when and how to talk about that renewal has sort of changed. It used to be that you'd want to get really far ahead of it so you can really plan. In some cases now, you almost want to wait closer to that expiration and not be as proactive if you're on the landlord side of things, because you really want to see, you know, if they are going to move. It's tough, but you don't want it to be as easy for them to just say, oh yeah, we've got, you know, 6, 9, 12 months to go move. You really want to wait and see sometimes. Or there's the other side of it, is you might want to wait for what global event or what, you know, the next hurdle,
right,
you can get past.
Right. Or, I mean, I don't know when the market will all of a sudden get better. It's not a day's change. But if I had a year left on the lease and I wanted to just stall it out for 6 months, on the landlord side, I don't know, unless there's this world event, that you're going to be hurt by it. You just keep chugging along and put the blinders on a bit. And if you're the tenant, maybe they're still struggling with figuring out, how much space will I really need, and can I get some more people back to work, or what is that? And so in my opinion, the volume of transactions then slows down, because and you have size. People that are what I'll call kicking the tires, thinking about it, but not really actively engaging. Whereas in a tight market, if you felt like the next deal would be a little more expensive than the previous deal, if you felt like there were not a ton of opportunities for you out in the market and you found something you liked, you would jump, right? And so it just slows the whole thing down.
And you'd see longer commitments previously than you do now. So now there's a lot of 12-month kick the can or 24-month kick the can to try and see, okay, we don't really want to move now. If you're a tenant, they're sitting there saying, we may not want to move right now, but we also don't know exactly what that footprint is, as you mentioned. So maybe just that 12-month extension is the right way to go for those tenants. And landlords sort of have to put up with that, because the question is there another tenant right behind it?
Right.
And depending on where you're looking at in the county, the answer could be even worse than
right.
just the status quo right now.
Right. From a landlord's perspective, just keep the cash flow coming in, and it's not an ideal world. And then that also doesn't help for the stabilization of the building. And then you have the interest rates run up, right? So I guess I'm curious as to your perspective in terms of how that affects the real estate market and how it affects different players in the market. Because if I had a cheap interest rate, and that interest rate was going to adjust or roll, and my building was struggling and I didn't have it full, I would get what I call the double kick in the knees, right?
So not sure how sophisticated or the audience is here, but to give a little background on that, more often than not, if you own a multi-tenant office building, the loan that you would get on a building like that, the financing you'd get on a building like that, is going to be somewhere, usually it's amortized over 25 years, but it's usually a 5, 7, or 10-year loan. So usually, in office space, it's typically even a 5 or 7 year loan.
Fixed.
So that means you've got a balloon payment at the end of that 5 or 7 year loan. And if you, 5 or 7 years ago, if you had a rate that was closer to a 4% rate, and now all of a sudden, where financing rates have gone for office buildings, it's unbelievable, because most lenders don't even want to lend on it, which means it's very difficult to find one. So if you can find one, and that means your multi-tenant office building is probably 100% full, which is very rare in this market.
With leases in place, because if they're rolling, the bank gets nervous.
They do. And so you're looking at rates that might be in the 8.5% interest rate range. So if you were at a 4, and now because you have 100% leased office building, you can get an 8, let's say.
Doubles.
That is very expensive. And so if you only did your loan 5 or 7 years ago, you didn't really pay down that principal very far. So now when you go to refinance it, not only are you trying to refinance a very large number, but at the same time, they're going to go off the value of the building. And because of where rates are, values have dropped in some cases almost in half. And so now you have a really big issue. Also, on a commercial loan, they don't always just look at it as a loan to value. They also look at it on a debt coverage ratio. So they look at how much your debt payment's going to be versus how much income you have. And if it doesn't cover the certain ratio, which is usually a 1.1, 1.2 right. ratio, then all of a sudden your loan gets cut. And so it's actually going to end up being, that's going to be where we see the distress, and we see office buildings primarily. I think we're going to see a lot more in 24, rolling into 25 as well, that are going to be in that distressed sale position.
And we've started to see it a little bit There's in isolated cases, not widespread, because it's the debt, I think, that's going to force the conversation. Correct. But in many instances, you'll see, I think, what you saw in, you know, recession in 2008, 7, 8, 9, 10, where you'd have an owner just walk away from the building, give the bank the keys, walk away from their equity because they know there's no solution in sight. If I can't fill the building and my debt doubles and there's no short-term answer for me, then what am I doing? And so the landlord that's well-heeled that wants to own the building if it's a prime asset for the long term, that's one thing. But if I'm not emotional about it and it's purely just a cash flow issue, then I think you'll probably see some trades.
Yeah, and we actually already saw this year, you know, a lender who ultimately ended up foreclosing, but it took them about 5 months to actually go through that whole process as they worked with the borrower to try and figure out, this is on a 500,000 square foot, 5-building project in Aliso Viejo, where they literally worked with the borrower to try and figure out, you know, how are we going to go through this? Do we really want to take it back? If we really take it back, then what are we going to do? Ultimately, what they did was they did have a foreclosure sale, and they plugged in a local operator with a national platform, but they plugged in a local operator to operate the property for them, which is unlike what we saw in the past. In the last cycle, when they foreclosed on it, a lender didn't typically know how to run that property. Right. So this is where they brought in professional operators to actually operate the property while they own it. I don't know how often we're going to see that, but I know there's a lot of operators gearing up and having those lender conversations to say, hey, we can be your guy.
Right.
There was another case where almost 1 million square foot project where the lender also took them many months to try and figure out what they were going to do. They ultimately ended up infusing some more dollars in from a lender standpoint and put it on the equity side. So they became part owners and recast that debt, kicked it out a couple years to try and figure out how do we play on the upside, because they actually believed in the property enough to say, hey, how do we play on the upside? And that particular lender happened to be a group that does have a investment equity side to their business along with the debt side to their business. So we'll see unique situations like that. But I think a lot of these lenders, if it's a traditional bank, that's not going to happen. That's going to be a foreclosure or a forced sale, and it's going to be really interesting.
And then the question will be, who's really lined up to, you know, do it, because it is really some heavy lifting. And then it'll be interesting to see what happens with respect to rates and concessions in the marketplace, because typically when there's a distress sale, somebody gets the property at a discount, so they can obviously rent it for lower, and they're trying to get it filled, so they, for lack of a word, give away the farm just to get people in, right?
And so rental rates are an interesting one, because a lot of people will come and they'll ask me, they'll say, so wait a second, I don't get it. This building's 65% occupied. The owner needs this lease. Why are they not willing to drop it? And what ultimately ends up being 50 cents a square foot on a monthly basis, lower than where the last deal was done. Why would they not do it? Don't they just want the cash flow?
Right.
And the answer oftentimes is no, they can't do it. Number one, because there's lender restrictions. There's covenants in their loan that don't allow them to do that. But also when it's an institutional owner, they take very hard lines with these based on their investors and everybody who's behind them, that they can't do stuff like that because it devalues the property.
Right, because they'd just be committing to take a loss.
So when you see these, ultimately you see that foreclosure and you see that sale happen, now all of a sudden, what's really interesting to look at is the buyers that have taken place this year on the assets that have sold, which are institutional quality assets. Normally big institutions would buy these things. 80% of them have been purchased by individual local investors, guys that, you know, maybe we've heard their name. A lot of us haven't. And so all of a sudden they're coming out, and these guys are going to have very different motivations than your typical Class A office building owner, even though now they're an owner in the market. So that does come into play when you start talking about, okay, now that they own it at this lower basis, this lower value that they bought it at, they can do these lower rates. Now, they're probably not going to give the same concessions, though, that the prior institutional owners would have given, which is the free rent and the tenant improvement dollars that are going to come from the landlord side. They're now, these individual owners are more likely to say, well, yeah, if you want to spend money in your space, that's fine. We're going to give you a low rate.
Right. I want cash flow. Get in, start right. paying.
But we don't want to spend money on the space. So it's going to be a very interesting market as that changes to that local investor versus the institutional.
And then if you switch hats for a second from the tenant's perspective, I guess the tenant's a winner either way. Either they're going to a building where they're going to get some free rent, which will help offset their move and get them in, or they're going to get a lower rate, or in some instances, both, right? And so it'll be interesting to see. What I've also found is that when you're out in the marketplace and you're looking for space, there's obviously a lot of options out there today. But when you start applying the filters that a particular tenant might, if you just said, hey, I don't care, I just need a roof over my head, you might have 100 options. Mm-hmm. But if you said, I want this kind of a building, I want this location, I want free parking, I want to be on the ground floor,
it starts to narrow it down.
Right. It really does start to narrow it down. And then you still have options, but it's not as ridiculous as one might think.
And I know I've been talking a lot as though I represent the landlord. I would say 30% of my business, I still represent tenants as well. And so I am on that side where I'll sit there the biggest thing is trying to first understand, what is my client's true need when it comes to this office space? Is it just a roof over the head? Because in that case, you know, maybe we can find one of those individual owners, those non-institutional owners that just acquired a building, go to one of those and get them a super cheap rate. And maybe that's what they like. Now, the caveat going into those buildings is the question is, does that owner have a track record of, you know, professionally managing a property right. too? Will that Class A building drop off in quality, or will it stay the same? So that's something that a tenant has to be conscious of as they go into those buildings that have traded. At the same time, there could be a great opportunity. And I do think as a tenant, if you're confident on your square footage size and your needs, there are great deals to be had out there. And one thing we haven't mentioned, and we're sitting in an Irvine Company property right now, but we uniquely sit in a market that's unlike almost any other. The only other market I can think of that even remotely competes to us, where we have 30% of all office space in Orange County is owned by one single owner, which actually is owned by one single person, which right. is the Irvine Company. Detroit's probably the only other market that I can think of that has a single owner that owns about 50% of the Class A office space. But it's a real interesting player to have there, because the Irvine Company runs their buildings in a true Class A operation. And so as a tenant, some clients of mine say, no, I will only go to an Irvine Company right. property because I know exactly what I'm getting. And then other clients of mine will say, hey, look,
I don't want to deal with
that's not. And by the way, maybe I don't like the plain vanilla-ish of a lot of their property. Now, they don't have only plain vanilla. In fact, I always say they have all different product type that we can pick from, all different flavors, if you will. But nevertheless, it is something that a tenant has an option of. Other landlords have to be weary of, because, you know, if you're competing with the Irvine Company
can go as low as they want.
They really can, because they have very, very low basis in all of their properties.
Right. And they really will dictate. And then in many instances, you know, you have the most popular rent in today's market, which is called withheld. and so I'm not going to tell you what the rate is. Tell me if you like the space, mm-hmm. and then I'll make up a deal, right? Versus sure. the industrial withheld, at least for the last couple of years, was the market is so hot, I'm not going to tell you a rate, because I'm waiting to see if there's another deal that got done that was more expensive, and then maybe I'll make up a number that way. But it creates a conversation, which is, I don't really want to tell you what deal I'm going to make until you come look. And then we see that on the apartments, which is, what's the deal, right? Mm-hmm. I don't even want to come and look unless you tell me what the deal is. And so you're caught in that sort of catch 22.
And that's a supply and demand, right? You know, in the apartment side, there's not a lot of supply. And so, you know, you have a very different market than when you're on the office side, where you've got tons of supply. So, you know, usually I think right now, most landlords that I deal with, if there's a tenant that's looking at a space, they'll tell me at the final hour, you know, matter what, they'll say, okay, really, what does it take to make this deal so we can ultimately decide?
Right.
If it's you know, something that's absurd, they're not going to do it. But for the most part, there's a strong likelihood that most of my clients will probably say, okay, how do we make this deal?
Right. And that gets also back to the connection or disconnect in terms of expectations between landlord and tenant, right? So if the tenant is what I'll call a grinder and just wants to keep grinding and grinding away, then you see those versus, look, you know, you're getting a deal. Just tell me what it's going to take and I'll make the deal. I mean, it's not, I don't want to equate real estate to selling a car because it's absolutely not the same. But if you said, I like the car, here's the price I'm willing to pay, otherwise I'm going across the street, then in today's market, especially with the office space, that's kind of what it is. And so, but it's also back to, look, are you a quality tenant? Do you have good financials?
For sure.
Right? I mean, that's the other piece of it. Because you're making a long-term commitment.
And look, we're seeing companies come out that don't have any financials. And so then a landlord has to try and figure out how do they hedge against that with security and all of that. And because, you know, new companies, which will always exist, especially here in Orange County, where we're very entrepreneurial, there's a lot of, I think the average tenant size is really, actually it's about 4,500 square feet. So it's because of how many entrepreneurs there are in Orange County. You know, landlords have to really try and figure out, okay, what's the risk factor here? And look, I had a project where it was 250,000 square foot buildings that were ultimately, or they were previously decided to be scraped, torn down for a redevelopment of a different project. They decided at the end of the day not to, so they just peeled everything out and rebuilt everything and built brand new spec suites, 100,000 square feet of spec suites. And we leased it up very, very quickly. It was in basically call it a year. I think it was just under a year. We leased up all 100,000 square feet, but then we ultimately got a couple of those spaces back prematurely again. Because, you know, you do your due diligence and yet at the same time there's on a percentage basis, there's bound to be somebody, unfortunately, who, you know, their business goes sideways or whatever it might be. And so the landlord has to make sure that as they review those financials, that it's, you know, going to make sense for them to also take the risk if they built something out for them and spent the money on it too.
And in today's world, doing tenant improvements is a challenge because the cost is, I don't know, it's got to be twice what it was before.
Oh yeah. And it's gotten to the point where, you know, you want to come out and say, yeah, we're willing to do it because it seems right. And at the same time, in fact, sometimes it's a shell space and sometimes a tenant doesn't understand that, you know, the shell space, well, you got to build it out for somebody. If the cost came in so high,
I'll just wait for the next guy. Not because I want to.
Until terms make sense for me to actually do it. I can't pay to have you be my tenant.
Right.
Essentially.
Yeah. And then what happens is the tenant goes out in the market, looks around, and if they could stay where they're at, if that space was a potential option, now you have the, I don't want to call it a game, but the process of, you know, what is the current landlord willing to do and can they take back some space? Can they reconfigure? And is that a better scenario for everybody? Tenant doesn't have to move. Landlord doesn't have to go get a new tenant. And so if you can keep your tenants, obviously you want to do that. If it's just for not sure. An option, then I guess you got to go to plan B.
Sure. And look, there's again, we mentioned there's plenty of options out there. But yeah, you're right. Landlords, if they can, they want to keep their tenants in today's world. It's an interesting time. I think we're going to see over the next easily through all the way till 2025, there's going to be some volatility there because interest rates really need to ease off. And then next year's an election year, which for our business is, as you know, very like usually it's a low volume year. People have a hard time making decisions when they don't know where leadership's going to take us, you know, going for the following 4 years.
So. Right. And in today's world, you have candidates on complete opposite ends of the spectrum that have completely different visions for what the economy should or could or would do.
Very true.
So without getting too political, the fact of the matter is real estate definitely dependent upon the overall economy for sure, whether it's hiring, whether it's just industry growth in general, inflation, interest rates, construction costs, all of those go into to make a deal.
And interest rates, again, we always think real estate, right? But interest rates affect businesses too, because businesses need to borrow money for their business operations, whether it's buying inventory or it's financing equipment or whatever that is. And when interest rates are high, it makes it really tough for businesses to try and also continue running at the same clip they were before. So, you know, that's, I think with that unknown, again, it's going to affect our business kind of on a not so great way for the next, you know, easily until 2025. So.
Yeah. And it's also people's expectations of where it's going, right? If you don't know where it's going because you just don't know. Stock market was up over 500 points this morning and it was down 1,000 last week, right? These are huge swings in the marketplace. And you have no idea whether inflation has, you know, changed or, I mean, they say it's better. Sure, it's better than last year, but it's not good. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if you can't plan as a business owner, it's very difficult to make decisions. And sure. So it makes for an interesting, challenging time in the real estate market for sure. And then the question is the people that can seize opportunities and take advantage of it. I think in the long term, they'll have done well. The people that are struggling along need to buy some time to allow the market to sort of correct itself, if you will.
Well, and struggling along, I saw an interesting stat. I think it was something like only 12% of Orange County residents can actually afford to buy a new home in Orange County. The median price is somewhere around like $1.25 million or somewhere in that range, $1.2 million something. I mean, that's pretty staggering. And so, yeah, when you start talking about affordability, we were talking about yesterday how the average lunch used to be, well, I don't know, we'd go out and be $12 or something like that. Now it feels like every time I go out, it's $24 just to get a, you know, just to get a lunch during in the middle of the day.
I keep looking for that $6 burger at Carl's and I can't find it. So.
Doesn't seem to exist anymore.
So we've only got a couple of minutes left. I want to try and sort of sum it up. Where do you think it's going for 2024? And what is the strategy, I guess, in a nutshell, both from the landlord's perspective and also from the tenants, if you can?
Yeah, good question. So I think in 2024, I think we'll see, I'd like to say, because 2023 really had, you know, not so great volume, truthfully, on the leasing side. I think it'll continue at that, that, you know,
kind
odd
just
velocity.
Chugging along.
Yeah, that odd velocity, a lot of starts and stops. I mean, we have a lot of starts and stops, I feel like. But I do think there's going to be a few more decisions made and potentially slightly better velocity next year, despite, you know, it being an election year. I think it's going to be a little bit of an anomaly from that standpoint. There's going to be more foreclosures or debt-driven sales on office buildings, which should lead to new ownerships being able to all of a sudden drop their rates. So from a tenant's perspective, I think there's going to be more opportunity for Class A properties that will be at lower rates than what we've seen this year. There's still a lot of landlords that have sort of held out. They've dropped them a little, not necessarily in their asking. They're still withheld. But ultimately where they're doing deals, they've dropped them a little. But I think we're going to see a little further fall off, probably another maybe even 15% in rate fall off next year. Huh. I think the concessions that a tenant's going to get are going to be good. However, the tenant improvement dollars, I don't think are going to get much greater than where they're at right now just because it's hard. It's very difficult. I do think construction costs have eased up a little bit, and they probably should remain at a pretty steady from this point going forward through the end of the year or through the end of next year, but it's
still high.
It's still very high. It's higher than, much higher than where it used to be. And the inflation is really kicked everybody in the pants.
At least you can get stuff. I mean, the whole supply chain thing, right. I think we're past that.
I still think the electronics stuff, I think there's still a backlog on some of that stuff. They go into, like, here in California with Title 24 and the lighting
and sometimes the AC.
Right. Like that stuff, I think there's still a backlog from my understanding. Not as long, but it's still long. So it creates some lead times.
And so if you're a tenant out in the market, right, I mean, you're going to get a good deal. You're going to get more concessions than you've seen historically for a long time. But the trick would be, in my opinion, to find some space where you're not gutting the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Make use of what you can. It'll be better for everybody, and you make yourself a better deal. And it'll go quicker.
And I think I'm hopeful that landlords will take a strong note from what the Irvine Company did in 2008, 9, 10, which was really 9, 10, 11, I should say, which was build out a bunch of spec suites, because that then makes that friction sort of go away. It reduces some of that friction for
the
tenants. You
just walk in and go, I like this, I'll take it.
And a tenant can move in and say, exactly. You don't need to spend more dollars. And the landlord can control their costs. So I usually advise a landlord to do it because they can control their costs up front and make it very easy for a tenant to move in.
Yeah, and you're designing somewhat functional generic space that if it doesn't work out, you're not gutting it again the next time.
And you can justify that to a tenant, and a tenant will accept it because they'll say, you're giving me a lower rate, I'm not asking you to spend extra dollars on me. And so I do think that we'll see more of that. Some landlords have really started, some of them are strapped by their debt again. But when those sales take place, which I think will be forced in next year. You know, we'll see a lot more of that, those forced sales next year. Those new owners are going to be able to do those better deals for the tenants.
And do you think that what we're experiencing in Orange County applies to LA or San Diego and those markets as well? I mean, it seems like it's the same thing going on everywhere.
I do. I think interestingly, Orange County has been better positioned for people that are actually occupying space than our surrounding counties. So LA's been really bad, where tenants don't necessarily want to occupy their space. Downtown's a complete ghost town.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, across LA, less people are going to the actual office than what we have in Orange County. San Diego seems to be pretty close to Orange County, but Orange County is still doing slightly better. But I think it's a common theme across the country. The best in class are doing very, very well, the best in class product. And then the cheap alternative, the cheapest alternative, is also doing pretty decently. It's that 80% in between that's having those hard times. So it'll be... I think it's going to be a fun time. We'll continue chatting.
Yes, we'll have you come back and we'll do a look-see, because everybody always comes on and we talk about other segments in the market, whether it's industrial or medical apartments, and everybody always pushes down on the office. And I feel like
we need office space.
Right. Now we need it to come back. So, but thank you for coming on and sharing your thoughts. If people need to or want to reach you, how can they find you? What's the website?
Pretty easy to find. You know, my LinkedIn, and you can just type in my name. I'm pretty easy to find on LinkedIn. Reaching out to me. Our website is nmrk.com. That's NMRK. That's our ticker symbol. But usually I'm more personable, so reaching out to me, that or my email is andrew.robben, that's andrew.robben@nmrk.com.
Yeah, and if you call me, I'll give out your home number. You can call later.
Perfect. Oh, yeah.
It's fine.
If I don't know you, I might not answer, but leave a voicemail.
Well, look, as we sometimes, once in a while, not that often, say in my house, fight on, right? Fight on for the office space and the office market. Fight on for USC, and on Saturday it's go Bruins. So I want to thank you for coming on. I wish you much continued success for you and your family and your business, and I appreciate you sharing your thoughts and insight as to the market as always. And we've enjoyed having you on the show. For everybody else out there, I'm Barry Sawitz, president of the Sawitz Company. I want to thank you again for tuning in to Let's Talk Real Estate. Thanks again to everybody here at OC Talk Radio for making the show happen. If it's Tuesday, we are talking real estate. We will see you back here next week. Thanks for tuning in.
Well, there you have it. You've been listening to Let's Talk Real Estate, your weekly BS with Barry Sawitz about the current state of the real commercial real estate market right here in Southern California. On Orange County's only community radio station, OC Talk Radio, streaming live from our studio here at the University of California Irvine's Beale Applied Innovation Center.